Move if only because it'll calm him down.
Where is he right now?
I asked him to gather everything together from the dispensary and kitchens. He was driving me nuts just sitting around looking miserable.
They spent one more night at the redoubt to get some necessary sleep and peace and in a good bed. There was no knowing when the chance might arise again, as it was completely unknown territory beyond the entrance doors. The next morning, they ate in silence. Jack was happier, but there was still the general air of tension that preceded the journey into the unknown outside world. The elevator took them to the top level, and they walked in silence along the corridor toward the exit doors, opening each sector from the code scratched into the metal plate above the keypad. This was a common feature of redoubt sectors, where enlisted men feared forgetting codes in an emergency, and so scratched the sec number on the inner side of the door. They couldn't have known how useful their precautionary measure would be in an unimaginable future. Finally, they stood before the outer door. Ryan paused before punching in the final code. He was concerned that they'd gotten this far with everything going so well. What if the actual entrance was blocked on the outside by a landfall, or that the sector was buckled or warped, and so permanently stuck? He turned to the others.
Triple red, people. Been too good so far. Can never be too careful.
There was no landfall outside the main sector. Neither was there any sign of human or mutie habitation. The redoubt's entrance was in a shallow valley, thick with lush green foliage, and trees that grew tall in spiraling shapes of mutated wonder. Like redwoods modeled on pretzels, they cast shadows across the valley floor in roller coaster shapes that reminded Jack and Ryan of the old rides they'd seen in the Greenglades theme park in Florida, once ruled by Baron Larry Zapp. That had seen them come up against another cult leader, Adam Traven, and the chain of thought led Jack to remember the Sun Children. He quickly dismissed the thought from his mind. Doc was lost on another road of memory altogether. The height of the trees reminded him of the redwoods he'd seen on a family holiday with his beloved Emily, Rachel, and Jolyon, long before the days when he'd been trawled by Kronos' whitecoats and thrust into the nightmare that was now his life. For a moment, Tanner wondered if his children had grown strong, and if they, in turn, had had children of their own. Did he have any blood that survived to face the new cost? Were there any vestigial remains of a Tanner family somewhere in the Deathlands even now? He hoped not. He could cope with this life, but he wouldn't wish it on anyone else.
Dark night. An ambushed dream.
Right. String out, people. Stay triple red. Doesn't seem as though there's anything out here. That's so fire-blasted dense you couldn't tell anyway.
It's not just human danger, though, Ryan.
Ryan nodded silent agreement. As he took the lead, with JB dropping back to cover the rear and the others stringing out in line automatically, he withdrew the panga from its sheath on his thigh. There was no actual path away from the sector, which suggested that no one had been around to beat such a way for a long, long time. But the large flowering plants and shrubs, the tall mix of differently seeded grasses, and the imposing shadows of twisted trees presented their own dangers. Some muti plants were sentient and preyed on small animals. Some were armed with poison that could be fatal to humans. And the cover was dense enough to provide shelter for any host of predatory animal life. The idea that they may just stumble across something that would defend itself with savage ferocity was enough to keep them alert. Mildred, three back in line, looked up to the sky. It was a fairly clear blue, with only a light dusting of purple across the scattered cumulus cloud cover to suggest any chem disturbance in this area. She figured the shadows cast by the trees couldn't be that heavy, as there was such an abundance of plant life in the valley. It could be that the shadow helped this growth, keeping off the worst excesses of the sun, which was burning orange in the sky. She looked behind, merely intending to pass on her observations, but was stopped by the look on Jack's face. The albino was directly behind her, and it was difficult for his pitted white face to ever look anything other than solemn and fierce. It took a lot to raise a smile from him, but even by his standards, Jack looked tense, something seeming to weigh him down.
Jack, everything okay?
Yeah, kinda. Feel like know this place.
Like deja vu or something? Does this have anything to do with what happened to you during the jump? With whatever's been bothering you?
Jack's face reflected indecision. Should he mention the strange dream vision now, especially as the sky was so reminiscent of the one he'd fought and nearly been chilled under. But it was just something that he couldn't bring himself to do.
Something weird. Can't remember where.
Mildred turned back to face the front and continue, leaving Jack to his own thoughts. She didn't believe that he couldn't remember, but knew that it would be pointless to pursue the matter. She only hoped that it wouldn't distract him too much if there were any need to be on the defensive. The thick undergrowth filled the air with a sickly sweet scent, the exaggerated and mutated pollens attempting to attract the myriad insects that swarmed through the valley. JB felt as if he'd never seen so many bugs in his life. Not that they particularly bothered him, but insect bites were one of those small irritations that could sometimes cause a person more annoyance and discomfort than any other affliction. Large mosquitoes and horsefly-derived insects hovered in the air, their wings humming ominously. Large stag beetles in an array of bizarrely luminous colors, changing as the stray rays of sunlight that filtered through the trees hit them, scuttled over his combat boots. Brushing the leaves of the overhanging plants and bushes from his face as he followed the others, he disturbed caterpillars and ladybugs of enormous size. Wasps and hornets the length of his index finger buzzed around the flowers, beaten in size only by bees so fat and large that it was a miracle of aerodynamics that they stayed aloft. While the armorer struggled with the insects, Dean had turned his attention to the array of birds and mammals that populated the valley. It seemed that the shallow basin had become a haven for the local fauna, as rat-like creatures and squirrels with bushes three times the size of their shrunken bodies could be seen on the valley floor and in among the trees. They were keeping well out of the companion's way, and from their behavior and large numbers, Dean felt it was safe to assume that there were no large mammalian predators in the valley. The shallow basin in which they found themselves stretched for approximately a quarter of a mile from the redoubt entrance to the horizon, which was the lip of a gentle incline that presumably led to a plain beyond. Ryan had picked a path that veered at a 10-degree angle from a straight line, as that seemed to be slightly less dense in growth than the alternatives. Away to each side and behind the outcrop that allowed entry to the redoubt, it seemed that the foliage was even denser, with the trees forming in places an impassable barrier. Ryan figured that the slightly less dense area in front of them was what remained of the old road to the redoubt. The fertile growth had obviously spread over it during the past century, but there was still enough dead ground caused by a road surface to slow the growth and leave it just spare enough to allow him to hack a way through. There was no trace of macadam left beneath their feet, the rich soil having long since been churned up to the surface by the insistent pushing of plant and tree roots. Progress along their self-made path was slow and punishing. The sickly sweet scents and the humidity meant that they were dripping with sweat and breathing heavily within half an hour of leaving the redoubt. Mildred thought of the showers with their carefully regulated water temperature and allowed herself a rueful smile.
Business as usual.
Ryan kept on hacking at the growth, creating a walkway. The muscles on his arms bulged as particularly stubborn growths refused to budge or he hit a knot in a tree branch. He gritted his teeth, sweat running into his good eye, making it sting. He was starting to wonder if they should turn back, and squinted up at the sun's position. Even though they'd taken their time from the old crons down in the redoubt, and those had told them that it was still early in the morning, there was no guarantee that they'd been correct. The last thing he wanted was to have his people caught in the middle of this jungle when night fell. The sun was almost dead center in the sky. The old crons had been accurate. They had plenty of time to reach the edge of the valley before nightfall, even at this appallingly slow rate. Time enough to scout over the lip and see what lay beyond. Ryan eventually reached the top of the valley's lip and stood surveying the territory that spread out below. The valley was formed in a small crater. It sloped gently away from the lip and out into a plain, which was covered by vast forests similar to those in the valley, linked by belts of grasses that reached taller than a man. Ryan waited for the rest of the party to reach the top, then turned to JB.
Want to check our position according to the map, just to get the right bearings?
Sure.
The armorer produced his mini-sextant from one of his pockets, pulling a map he'd taken from the comp control room along with it. He sighted the sun and checked their position by the map before pointing across to their left.
That's northwest. Not much left that way these days. But it does head toward the old Seattle area.
So maybe we should take that direction. Good as any. It looks deserted as far as I can see, but those forests can be deceptive. I figure we skirt around those, stick to the plane as much as possible. Maybe use the fringes for shelter at nights.
There was general agreement. Ryan was the unofficial leader, and his word was the final one. But he was always willing to listen to a well-reasoned opinion that could influence and inform.